And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Martin Willish, your host. I'm in a good mood tonight. I'm not really sure why, because it's cold outside, and but it's nice and warm here inside. And we have another great show coming up for you this evening. We have a couple of guests. Our guest coming up in the first hour is Christina Knowles, and she'll be talking about her website, Foundation for Research in Extraterrestrial Encounters, and much more. And in the second hour, we have Angel Espinio coming up. I heard him talk on UFOs on another show and thought he was pretty good. So I've invited him on my show, and he'll be on in the second hour. Before that, we have Alejandro Rojas coming up from openminds.tv. He's going to talk about the latest UFO events. And just one thing I want to announce here, if you've been emailing me, I haven't been getting your email for a while. It's been pretty quiet, and I've actually kind of relaxed a little bit. It's been going well. And I realized today people haven't been responding to my email. It was going out but not coming back in, and that's because I have a new dedicated server, and it just wasn't set up properly. So that's what's going on with that. So if I haven't answered your email, I am not ignoring you. I will be back as soon as it gets straightened out, and that's martin@podcastufo.com. So if you want to subscribe to hear the second hour of our shows as a podcast, go to getjoyride.com/podcastufo. The link is right on our website. And subscribers pay only a dollar or more a month to access the full show. And also, you have a private link. There's a way to listen on iTunes. There's a way to listen on your iPhone. There is a Android app. And, of course, there's Stitcher. Not sure what I'm going to do about that yet. But if you have any problems or questions, you can always reach me at, again, martin@podcastufo.com when that email is working. And we are ready to draw the prize for the $10 per month supporter for a free shipped to you Podcast UFO t-shirt. Doesn't matter where you live. I know it costs some money to ship overseas, but if you're the winner, you'll get this. And we are waiting right now for our lovely assistant. Hang on just one moment. Yes. Would you mind coming over here and picking from this basket? Just pick a name from the basket, if you would.
And well, hi, Martin.
Hi, who do we have here?
We have Ed Sanborn.
Ed Sanborn won. Yes, Ed Sanborn. So I'll be reaching out to you. Get your mailing address. Thank you very much. And we'll be sending that right out. So it's time now to bring on Alejandro. What is happening, Alejandro?
Oh, my gosh, there's so much happening. And you know, I think we talked about this last week, the Blue Book thing, right?
Yeah.
And John Greenwood posting the files. So that has exploded. So the Daily Mail picked up my story, and then other UK news picked up their story. Daily Mail luckily linked back to me and gave me credit, but the others didn't. But this has exploded. So then ABC News calls him. He's on ABC News Tonight.
I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we talked about some of the controversy around this, how some people were accusing him of stealing them, but it was this anonymous guy who provided them to many of us. Of course, these are Air Force files. They're all free to the public, you know. So he was able to get those posters, which is really cool. But the news is misreporting everything. The Today Show says something like, you know, oh, John Greenwald did all of these FOIAs, which he has, and he's gotten millions of pages of documents from FOIAs he's been doing since he's a teenager that he has at the Black Vault. But, of course, the U.S. Air Force Blue Book files have been out for a long, long time. He isn't responsible of that, nor is he claiming to be responsible for that. But all of these news sites are crediting him with it. Even the Today Show, of course, is out there saying John Greenwald got these files released when that wasn't the case. And it's funny because I keep in contact with him, and he's like, I clarified. I went over and over this with them because they kept saying, well, when you got these files out from the Air Force, and he said, no, I didn't get them out from the Air Force. They were already out. So even though he tried to clarify, they just said whatever the hell they wanted to anyway. And as we know, you know, because we monitor the stories from the media, they just don't care about getting the facts right when it comes to UFO stories. They just make stuff up, and it's so
right.
Weird.
Did you happen to read Kevin Randall's blog on that?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, he wrote a blog, just trying to clear up some of the misquotes and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's interesting because I follow his blog and read it quite often, but I hadn't seen that one. But, yeah, there's a lot of mistakes and stuff like that. But the point is, what's good about this is, a lot of people are looking at the files. A lot of people in the UFO field didn't even know. You know, you could go out there, it took some research, but you could find them. And so now they're more prevalent. Everybody's getting to know that these files are here, and they are reporting how there were 700, the Air Force alleges 700 unidentified cases. So people are hopefully looking for those and finding out more about that so they can read some of these amazing unidentified cases that are in the Blue Book files.
Yeah. What was the documentary that James Fox is working on? Isn't it 701 or something like that?
Yeah. James Fox with Tracy Torme right. And a couple others are working on some producers from Hangar One are working on this documentary. They're trying to get funds for it, so I don't know if it's ever going to happen. But that's the premise, is the 701 unidentified cases. Of course, the Air Force said there were 701, and their website says this, 701 unidentified among nearly 13,000 cases. But when you go look at the actual records, there aren't 701. In some cases, you see different numbers everywhere. So, and nowhere except for their claim do you see 701 unidentifieds. Some people estimate it at more like 650. Some say 500. Some people say 1,600. But if you go through the files, at least, and there are some guides out there that you could Google and find to find what some of the unidentified words. And then there's also J. Allen Hynek had his own accounting. So he felt there were more unidentified than the Air Force had said, but he also felt some that the Air Force said were unidentified were identified. So it's kind of confusing, but that's the official word, 701.
You know, I have to admit that I am one of those people that didn't know those files were accessible. And it's just only because I didn't really look into it. And I think what is going to happen is a lot of people out there now will start looking into these files because they perhaps have the same, thoughts that I did, possibly, that they didn't know that they were readily handy. So maybe, some more cases will get stirred up and a little more investigation and, who knows? I know it was a long time ago, but perhaps some witnesses will, get contacted or come forward or whatever. It's only maybe I'm just dreaming here, but, it could happen.
Yeah, it could. I think it's positive. I think it just demonstrates that there were good cases out there that even though people feel the Air Force kind of blew the whole thing off, that they took it very, very seriously. And because of these unidentified cases, many in the Air Force were not convinced that it is something not to pay attention to. Many felt that it was a very important subject.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Has anything been happening?
Yeah, there has. This is a really fun story. I think this is a cool one. And this is one of those where it's a slow news day and I'm hunting and hunting for stories. And I found a really interesting one in the French newspapers. Also, I found out other European newspapers are writing about this. But there have been UFOs since October flying over nuclear power plants in France and Belgium. And they don't know what they are. In fact, the French government says they're on high alert due to these UFO sightings. Now, the media and authorities believe that they're probably drones, quadcopters or something like that. However, sometimes they're seen in pairs, and some of the witnesses don't agree with that theory. The other thing is they don't know whose they are. They're saying, okay, well, we think they're drones, but we don't know whose. They're suspecting that it could be a anti-nuclear organizations that's doing this to show that, you know, nukes are scary and they can't protect them properly. But a lot of organizations have been working with the authorities and come forward and said, no, it's not us. So that hasn't panned out. But a lot of people are up in arms. Greenpeace is saying, look, you're downplaying the danger. This shows that, you know, anyone with a drone could fly, you know, a bomb into a nuclear power plant. So this is really crazy. There were something like 18 of them between flyovers in October and November, but they have been happening since. The last time this happened was January 3rd in France, where some security guards said they saw two flying objects. There were some teenagers arrested in October who were called airplane enthusiasts, model aircraft enthusiasts is what the news said. And they were going to attempt to fly something. So it was before they did it over the nuclear power plants. But the authorities have said these aren't the people who have been doing this. They were just copycatting because they're just using a simple toy with limited range. Whereas whatever has been flying over these things must have, you know, just must be military grade, highly sophisticated, because they can't track them and they don't know where they're coming from. How crazy is that?
Now, I'm wondering here if it's actually eyewitness accounts totally, or is there any radar involved in any of this?
Well, supposedly, from what I've read, it's eyewitness accounts. Some of those witnesses have posted on some websites. In particular, there's a guy named Andres Mueller who has a website called GRE.WI, and he has been reporting on this with some of the witness testimony, and what they report is weird, like tubes of light and some strange stuff. However, supposedly there are some footage and pictures that the nuclear power plants have obtained, but that they have not shared with the public as of yet. I did read that they did share some with the public, but I have not seen those pictures or videos yet. I haven't been able to find them. So, and throughout this, you can see there were a lot of people in the media telling them, you need to release these pictures, show us these pictures and videos. So they do have that. Like I said, these are security guards, people at these plants that work for the plants that are seeing these things and reporting them to the authorities.
Wow, amazing. Interesting.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Robert Hastings is alerted to this or looking into any part of it.
Yeah, you know, we've been so busy with our conference that I haven't asked him about that. But now you remind me, I did want to send this story to him and see if he has been following. And I'm assuming he does. I know he looks at our website, but I haven't heard from him. But you're right. We should check with him because, of course, he follows UFO sightings at nuclear power plants, and he has a ton of incredible witnesses. And I think we talked about this. He's trying to make a documentary and would love financial support from the public. So
right.
I encourage that too.
Yeah. Okay. So do we have one more story?
Sure. This is kind of an interesting one from the last few days. This is from New Mexico. There was a guy driving on the I-10 westbound near New Mexico, and he says he saw an extremely large, completely dark object hovering. He said he watched this thing for like an hour as he was driving. He did then pull over because he had to go to the restroom or something like that, or get gas. He took a picture of the object, and he reported this to MUFON, and we've got it on our site. This was written by Roger Marsh, who writes for us and posts, works for MUFON and posts their sightings. But when he got done getting gas, he looked for the object and it was gone. So even though he had been watching this for an hour, and it apparently to him was completely still for that entire hour. So kind of a, you can't make very much out from the picture at all. You can see there's something there. He took the picture with his phone, but unfortunately the resolution isn't enough. You zoom in and it's just kind of a blur. So it's hard to make anything out from the photograph, but kind of a strange, kind of a cool sighting there.
Right. And you can see this if you follow the show notes right on podcastufo.com. It'll link right to the original story on openminds.tv. Thank you, Alejandro. And we'll be talking. I know you're going to be busy next week, and you're going to get busier and busier as we go along. But hopefully we'll be talking to you next week.
Yeah, definitely. Always a pleasure, my friend.
You betcha. All right. I'll talk to you then.
Adios.
All right, so if you hang in there, right after the quick music break, we'll be right back with Christina Knowles. Music was provided by our listener, Bruce Rainier. And thank you, Bruce. Christina, I hope you're on the line. How are you?
I am. Very, very good, Martin. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for joining us. And I had the pleasure of meeting you a few years ago and really enjoyed your company and thought you were fairly bright. You're very bright. And I want to talk to you about your recent involvement. Is this a new... a new venture for you, or fairly new? I know that you've been working hard with experiencers over the several years.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular website, the Foundation for Research, into, let's go ahead and talk about that, and you can talk about your background a little bit, too.
Fantastic. I really appreciate that. And yeah, it's great to be on the air with you again. I know in the past I was working with the Experiencers Project, so that led, you know, the television project in conjunction with Jim O'Connell, so that led to a wonderful opportunity to get more involved in this and to find out that this was really my niche, that I wanted to work with experiencers. And I just have to compliment you too, Martin. You have been fantastic. I've been following your work over the last couple of years and absolutely love all the speakers that you bring on and just all the breakthroughs that we seem to continually enjoy in this field. So it's an honor to be with you again.
Well, thank you. And yes, the show I do has only to do with the guests, and it's not always easy getting guests, but there's interesting ones sometimes. There's, you know, I get a lot of email about different people, but it's real enjoyable to speak to so many, you know, different people with different ideas and thoughts, because, you know, no one really has an answer. It's just, it's more interesting just looking for it. And, you know, perhaps someday that will change. But let's talk about the Foundation for Research into ET Encounters.
Great, great. I appreciate that. So first off, I want to make sure that I give our website out just so that everyone knows how to actually find where we're located on the web. It's Experiencer, so that's experiencer.co. So instead of com, it's just .co. And then, of course, we can be reached at our email address, which is free@experiencer.co. And I should say that when I was leaving the other project, when you and I met, the TV series, acting as co-producer and whatnot, and lead investigator for that, one thing that happened and occurred to me is that really, really good quality research is necessary in the field. And I didn't feel that we completely had that to date. So what had happened is I was working with a wonderful gentleman. It was actually a case that I had been investigating by the name of Ray Hernandez out of Miami, Florida. And he called one day with a brilliant download, and any experiencer that's had the download kind of thing occur would definitely relate to that. So I said, oh my gosh, Ray, pull over. You know, I don't want you to get hit, you know, because I knew he was on the freeway and he had this download. And he just was very excited and animated and went into this concept that we should be collaborating and doing research. So I just thought it was phenomenal. And from there, it expanded to Mary Rodwell out of Brisbane, Australia, who's phenomenal. I had been meeting with her over Skype and had been following her work for many years. And so the idea had come up that we would create a new non-for-profit research organization. And so we refer to ourselves as FREE, which stands for the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. So out of this idea, once we started to attract to ourselves, which is very rapidly and mysteriously just all fell right into place, but different PhD physicists, PhD psychologists, various scientists, medical professionals, and a diversity of experiencers that would all work in, you know, under one umbrella as an open-air university, if you will. And that by bringing these diverse voices together, that we could discuss specifically what was going on with the experiencers, or some call us contactees or abductees. I certainly identify and have all the qualifying markers. So this is, you could say I have a very vested interest in this specific area of ufology. So going into that, what we did is we created a board of directors. And I should say that the phenomenal part, if you look at our website, there's a lot of information there, but we have not done this alone. We have the honor of working with some amazing people. So I just kind of want to go into that a bit. Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man on the moon, and also the founder of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, played a very key role in meeting with Ray Hernandez and inspiring us to develop FREE. And then we have Dr. Rudy Shields, the Emeritus Professor of Astrophysics at the Harvard University and currently working with the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. So they're actually both two of our founding board members for the advisory board, and it's been phenomenal to work with them. And what I love about this is it's not just about a bunch of bios, but people are actually coming together and have been for some time now. We launched this, I would say, probably in March of 2013, and it grew very rapidly. And then we officially launched the site in September of last year. So wonderful stuff.
Great, great. And just for anyone that's listening live, you can jump in the chat room and send Christina a question if you'd like, or a comment. And that's very easy. Just jump on podcastufo.com and right to the right hand side, you'll see the chat room. It's a 2-click sign in. So Christina, have you actually been working with Dr. Mitchell?
Yes. So we have a very interesting relationship within FREE. We like to appreciate the gentleman's time and make sure everyone at a certain level has certainly their day job and other things that they have to accommodate within what they're doing. So when we have specific projects that we need feedback on, typically that will go through Ray, who has met, Ray Hernandez, who has met with Dr. Mitchell a number of times at his home. And then, of course, Dr. Rudy Shields, knows Edgar, so a lot of times we'll get information back that way. And he's been phenomenal. Now, Dr. Shields is much more accessible, which has been lovely. And a lot of the quantum, you'll see a lot of the different questions and things on the website, a lot of the write-ups, that's the information that we can refer to. Now, I think I've done a little disservice here. I want to go backwards in time and just kind of talk a little bit about Ray Hernandez, because mm-hmm. this gentleman is phenomenal. Read it quickly just so that the listening audience knows, but he's an experiencer who is currently employed as an estate tax attorney with the IRS, U.S. Department of Treasury. He's also obviously co-founder, co-director of FREE. He was previously the director of Center for Sustainable Urban Environment at the City University of New York and the director of the Office of Community Environmental Planning for the City of New York. He's attended Rutgers College, Cornell University, and was a PhD candidate at UC Berkeley in city and regional planning. He was also the recipient of the National Science Foundation PhD Fellowship, and he resides, as I said, in Florida. And then again, I just want to give credit to anyone who might not know who Mary Rodwell is. She's certainly really well-known within my circles, but some might know. So she's a counselor and hypnotherapist, ufologist, researcher, metaphysician, and former registered nurse and midwife in the UK. She's founder and principal of ACERN, which is Australian Close Encounter Resource Network, and she is recognized internationally as one of the leading researchers in the UFO and contact phenomenon. She's lectured in all over the world, US, Canada, Hawaii, UK, New Zealand, and appears regularly in national and international media and news programs. So she's phenomenal. And anyone that hasn't read the book, I would highly suggest getting it, Awakening, How Extraterrestrial Contact Can Transform Your Life. And she resides in Queensland, Australia, but fantastic. So we put this idea together. We decided that we really wanted to develop a team, and for three specific reasons. So our main objective is research, educate, and support. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. So our research project, what we're doing with that, we have Dr. John Climo. He's the chair of our Experiencer Research Project. He is a professor of psychology with over 40 years experience as an academic researcher and teaching professor who has chaired over 250 PhD dissertations in psychology. 75 of those have been in the field of the paranormal. Fantastic near-death experience. I mean, this man, I could talk to him forever. He's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And then we have Dr. Leo Sprinkle. He's the co-chair. He's retired professor of psychology who has undertaken research in the field since 1962.
Right.
And very well.
His name comes up a lot. Yes.
Right. Yep. And Kathleen Martin. She's MUFON's director of abduction research, and she's the author of several major ufology books, including the one Alien Abduction Files with Denise Stoner. And Denise Stoner, I'll go into her bio in a quick second. But she has been phenomenal to work with as well. And then we have Barbara Lamb. She was the therapist that I was able to work with years ago when I was having my awakening after my experiences in March of 1999. So that helped tremendously. She is the author of Alien Experiences and Crop Circles Revealed, and she has conducted research on over 3,500 experiencer cases now throughout the world. And again, Denise Stoner, a lifelong experiencer. She has worked in the field for the last 20 years and is co-author with Kathleen Martin on the Alien Abduction Files again. And then we have Ralph Steiner. He is a researcher in the paranormal field for 25 years now and a non-academic physicist with expertise on the quantum hologram theory of physics and consciousness. So again, it's an honor to be able to work with these folks. I feel like the idiot of the bunch sometimes, to tell you the truth, especially when we start getting into all the different quantum discussions. It's awesome.
Hmm.
And I should say that I just stop quickly with Ralph and say I want to congratulate Ralph because he is going to be starting this lovely radio show on KGRA radio. And it's going to be entitled The Other Side of the Universe. And the focus is going to be science explores all aspects of ET contact and the paranormal. And again, it's going to be on KGRA Digital Broadcasting Station, and it should start sometime early March of this year. So very good stuff.
That's great. Great. Now, I just had this conversation with someone down in Portsmouth, New Hampshire the other day. We were out at lunch and we were just chatting, and I'm just going to ask you what you would say to this claim that he had. He said, well, you know, he was talking about alien abductions, and he says, you go back in time. He said there were the elves, there were the, you know, the demons, there was, you know, all these different things. He says today is just, you know, it's the fashion is aliens instead, and alien abduction, and that's all it is. You know, leprechauns. He went on and naming all the different mythical, you know, encounters that happened in the past. And so, you know, I just wanted to hear what your take was on how would you respond to someone that would say that to you.
Oh, I think it's a fantastic theory, and we should actually test that, you know, with the data that we're receiving. So, in other words, if in fact whatever has been visiting mankind has the ability to manipulate the mind, then wouldn't it stand to reason that one would perceive the experience as an elf or an angel or a demon or God only knows what? So this is another aspect of research, and I think this is the exciting part of research, is first admitting we don't know what the hell we're doing, and then secondly, really digging into it and looking at the data. And, I mean, let's face it, today in this age, we're not hearing a bunch of fairy reports, are we? No, we're hearing ET. However, we do have more scientific practices now to be able to ascertain that something is clearly non-human, you know, the vessel, let's say, these, you know. So are we, when we go into these types of flying vessels, which we are being, you know, in our modern day able to record, and obviously firsthand testimony such as mine and others around the globe, what are we really going to look at when we pop the, you know, when let's say we look inside that craft? So I think it's a great question. Something that, again, hopefully the research will give us a clearer picture, but I highly doubt that we will be any, in other words, in my lifetime, we might be just a tad closer. So this is, to me, an endeavor that you never quite, it's a rabbit hole you will never quite get to the bottom of. And that's exciting. I will never tire of it.
you know, I agree. Well, let's just say that you were in getting an encounter from an alien, and these millions of people or hundreds of thousands, how many are that are claiming, you know, globally that this is happening to them. You know, if these beings were clever enough to actually go interstellar, then they could probably control about anything that they want. If everything is true, what you hear, or even part of it is true of what you hear, you know, but it makes you wonder, too, like, it just seems like there would be more witnesses or something like that. Someone would actually, you know, you hear of a couple of cases, but, and you hear of a couple of interesting cases about people being awake and not being able to move and all that and seeing things happen. But it just seems like there would be some type of slip up eventually where there was.
That's right.
Yeah. What's your opinion on that?
That's right. Well, here's my opinion. I do this work all day long, and if I wanted to, I could take a new case or more. Sometimes there was a mode, I'd say several years ago, where I was crazy enough to take three new cases on a day, which is insanity, because if you're really trying to work a case. So what I can tell you is from my perspective and where I'm sitting, we are overwhelmed with cases, and people do not really know what's going on. And when you've talked to one, you, and again, this is why, I mean, one of my goals is actually to document the research. I'm going to be speaking at the Experiencers Speak conference, hopefully in August, and that will give me an opportunity to have some of that research there. I want to go back to what you said a second ago, well over, you know, you said something to the effect of 100,000 cases. Here's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with many, many more than that, okay? And this is only what we know. So in research so far, what we found is that they do ET, and I do believe they're extraterrestrial. I'm not here to talk about fairies and mermaids. I'm here to talk about extraterrestrials and intelligent, and we can call them whatever we want. I don't care. We can talk about, you know, what do they look like? We could spend all day, okay, the different species and all that. But when you are in an abduction scenario or contact scenario, as it were, and you find yourself connecting with these beings, they are extremely telepathic. So number one, as a researcher, that's one of my clues because, again, I did not believe in UFOs prior to March of 1999 when I had my adult sighting. I did not believe in the existence of extraterrestrial life. I had been deprogrammed by society, by the media, by religion, not to believe that this even was ever going to pop up on my radar. Okay. So when it did, and I actually went through that process of having direct recall, okay, there's a lot of, with research, oh, you know, regression, blah, blah, blah. Fine. Don't look at regression work. Let's just look at the hard research and what someone actually consciously recalls, okay? There's a lot of evidence, and then, of course, researching many cases now. And again, when you do this research, experiencers don't go away, which is a beautiful thing. They continue to call and check in. Mm-hmm. And that's the most important part that we can do is actually connect with one another. Connect. Talk. Open up. Okay? Now, why don't people want to go so public with this? Because they have families, because there's still this ridiculous societal stigma that if you even talk about UFOs, you're crazy, much less having some type of, you know, communication with these beings. So there's a lot of that. And again, that's why I feel so passionately about free, is because we really are not doing ourselves any kind of service by just pretending that this is not real. I think, hello, if they're flying in the sky, then yeah, maybe we should pay attention to the evidence that they're leaving behind. And everyone's like, show me the evidence, show me the evidence. I can. It's called hundreds of thousands of human beings all over the globe that are having these contact experiences. And guess what? They're not stopping. They call me all the time. I had another one. Okay, cool. Let me get a cup of tea, sit down. All right, well, let's go. What's going on here? You know, okay, da-ba-ba-ba-ba. So again, it's more than I can handle or anyone else. So that's why we've developed these kinds of instruments to be able to really study this and to really, really, really. The matter of fact, let me talk about that for a second. So the research instruments, the first survey or questionnaire alone that anyone can take, and by the way, if you're an experiencer and you would like to fill out the information in an anonymous with an anonymous name, that's fine. We do have certain technical mechanisms, which I'm not going to go into detail, but we can track certain things just to make sure that we're not getting inundated with garbage data. And that is just for the phase one questionnaire. So that's 100 questions roughly. When we get into phase two, we are well over 1,000 questions. Okay. Wow. And I'm not going to go into why. I'm going to say again, this has been taken, the methodology, quantitative, qualitative, and everything else that we've been putting together for quite some time now, is there for a reason. And I didn't design it. I'm just blown away at the individuals and what they've come up with at the academic level. Then the phase three interviews would be one-on-one. So that group will be smaller. So we'll be able to look for different indicators within. Okay, now some of the indicators, just, and I don't know how much you talk about abduction. A lot of people talk about UFOs. So some of the indicators for me, researcher that's already been there, done that, I would look for the paralysis because I certainly can relate to that. I would look, by the way, you are awake. You're absolutely awake. And so this is much different than this garbage where they say, oh, it's sleep paralysis or anything like that. Yep. You're actually able to see a being for a certain amount of time. And again, we can talk about verbiage. We should write new dictionaries for everything that's being discovered in the research. But let's just say that the individual is switched off at a certain point. Why? Well, because of the stress, because it's very, very stressful. And no matter, even if you're a lifelong contactee, and this is something I'm monitoring in a lot of the cases that I'm working with, some do very well in their environment, which means in their home. And this is also a shift in what I'm seeing in a lot of cases, is that people would say, oh, I'm abducted and I'm in. And I believe me, I've been in both environments. I can say, yes, I definitely can relate to what it was like to be in a more extraterrestrial environment on a craft, let's say, and what it is to have contact when I'm in the comfort of my own home. So I've kind of covered a lot of that. And again, we're only talking about my little, you know, neck of the woods and my Christina's research. We're not even talking about what Free has done. Very excited. And again, we don't have a tremendous amount of cases like some of the organizations, others do. We're taking things very slowly and very at a very clinical level because we do want to make sure that the data is good. We do want to vet it out. And then we want to dig deeper into that data and follow the cases throughout. So we're not in a rush. It's not about making a name for ourselves or anything like that. It's actually about really understanding and uncovering something that is happening globally now. So I know I've covered a lot of ground. Yeah. I'm not looking at the chat room right this second.
No, that's good. We do have one question up there.
Please.
And someone wanted to know if the experience with the contact you had, was that positive or negative?
Oh, I think that that's an excellent question. That's actually part of some of the pie charts. And what's awesome to me about a lot of the research that the feedback we're getting from the experiencers is that we are somewhere around neutral. So in other words, they're saying, just like me, positive, negative, and neutral. Why is that? Because it depends on where you are with your psychology, your psyche. So in other words, in the beginning, terrified. Are you kidding me? Absolutely terrified. Absolutely terrified. March of 1999. In fact, I talked to a friend of mine who knew me around that time and said, Christina, don't you remember? You'd come over after work, you'd shower, and you'd curl up in a ball and fall asleep. You did not want to go back to your apartment. And he said you could not stop talking about the UFO that you saw on your hunting trip, nor the red light that floated into your room, a couple nights later. I couldn't remember. That kind of stuff gives me chills and I think that's why it gives me so much compassion to do the work that I do too. The most important part of this is talking for me today is talking to other experiencers, because this doesn't only affect them. This affects their families. This affects their children, their careers, everything. Okay. So yes, absolutely negative in some respects. Now over time, and perhaps because I've decided not to run away from it, but to really integrate these experiences and try to come to a deeper understanding of why that they're in my life and what possibly could ET want with me? What is this about? Am I inviting it? Lots of deep questions. Then we get into the positive aspect. And I don't believe that is just some, altered state that they are projecting. I've heard so many different theories, and I really don't believe that. You hear just everything, but that's fine. Everyone is entitled to their belief. And I do believe that there are positive ETs. As it is in heaven, so it is below. So we have positive ETs. We have negative ETs for sure. And the sooner that mankind kind of wakes up to that, I think that to me is like an awakening all in of itself. Wow. Really? Okay, great. Free will. Then what do we do with it? So,
Well, another question that just came to mind for me is, When this is going on, first of all, you said earlier, which I'd be totally like scared to death. I couldn't even imagine, what I've hear about, some of these things. But when this first happened to you right away, did you actually realize what it was? What was going on? No,
absolutely not. No. I mean, I observed with three other adult friends of mine several UFOs. So first we had one sighting. We knew that whatever it was, we were in Apple Valley, California, in the desert, in the black of night on a hunting trip. Now, this was one of my first hunting trips. I am not a hunter. I had a spiritual epiphany that night and thought, ugh, I can't do this. This is not me. I was really just trying to do it back then to impress my boyfriend at the time. And so I was with him and a married couple that I was rooming with at the time in Huntington Beach, California. So here we are in Apple Valley. We see this beautiful white orb that was to my right, probably 30 feet off the ground, 30 to 60 at that point. And I remember thinking, wow, that's awesome. Just completely like, holy moly, that's so not, that's not the moon. We were trying to put, what is that? There was absolutely no sound whatsoever. So we pulled our gear out. I'm going to fast forward the story. My friend, I won't mention his name, he ended up killing a bobcat. So we brought the bobcat back to the truck. We're putting the gear in the truck. We get in the sleeping bags. We're looking up at the sky. We're bumbling down the dirt road. The husband is driving, the wife is sitting next to him, and all of a sudden I see from my left what I thought was a shooting star, and this white orb stops directly over the truck. And this is probably maybe 100 feet up in the air. And I am thinking to myself, what the heck? And before I can even sit up, another one is joined from my right, and the two are now directly above the truck. The two orbs start to spin around one another. A third blips out eventually, and they make a triangle formation. And it was just phenomenal. I remember we sat up, we rapped on the back of the truck, you know, to tell our friends, hey, look up. They were stunned, and that's when everything gets real weird. I have recall to the point that the truck completely is drained of energy. We went from being very excited to being absolutely terrified because these things were descending upon the truck. We were eventually engulfed in a blue light, and the body memory of being pulled up into this energy of the craft was very much what I had experienced all my life, but I had no place to kind of fit that in. So I do identify as being a childhood contactee. I've had many, many, many experiences my whole childhood, but didn't have any context to put it in. So I kind of just blocked it out. And again, this is a fascinating area of the research. We're finding that over and over again, that a lot of these childhood cases, they kind of dismiss it. They go through puberty. They try to you know, block it out for whatever reason. And then, bammo, there's an adult awakening, and it all kind of comes back. Okay.
I talked to Denise Stoner back, I don't know, I think it was about 8 months ago, something like that. And we talked about the commonalities. And I thought that was pretty interesting. But one of the things I want to ask you, do you have any reference to anything that is just way out there different? I mean, do you have what people claim to have encounters that it just doesn't fit, but it still sounds credible in a way?
No. Typically, there's such a pattern that when things don't fit, it's not that I won't look at the data. And believe me, I'm growing every day. Every day I'm learning something new. So I really have had to stretch myself. But I would say that I would, in what I'm interested in researching with this is that, yes, I'd like to stick with things that actually fit what we already know. Now, let me give you a perfect example. When ET, okay, it disrupts the environment, and in early research, you would hear a lot of what? Missing time, okay? So when an contactee is taken, they will sense cognitively that they've had a block of missing time. Okay. Not only were they physically, typically not in the environment that they were last seen by family members, there's all kinds of markers in the casework, right, that you could do to have these certain things proven. So this is, we came up with missing time, right? Somewhere along in abduction research, certainly not me. This has been way, way before me. Now, a new trend that I'm seeing, and I've discussed with other researchers that, have, again, their caseload is much heavier than mine, and they have entire teams such as Joe Montaldo at ICAR, very involved in this research. But there's the idea that you would, the contactee is sometimes put back a day sooner. Okay, so the contactees are reporting déjà vu. They're reliving an entire day all over again, or a variation, because the timelines are so easy. I don't know how this works. That's why I think, like, this is crazy. But certainly, if you can have missing time, then I guess it would reason, you know, if they can manipulate time and all of that. So, again, I don't know. That's why I'm going to leave it to the scientists. I just kind of, as the experiencer, I try to be as open as I possibly can and get this information, and it's okay if I sound nuts to me. I mean, I don't mind, because I get that. I'm like, no problem, you know. But we do fine. I mean, this is my niche. I mean, you'd have to be crazy, number one, to stick with, and we laugh about it too. It's great. Oh, and I should say that out of our board, all but two are experiencers. In other words, so that to me is amazing, and I'm not going to divulge the two that aren't. I get asked that all the time. And a lot of folks, too, it's not safe for them. So understand that my understanding is a lot of people make the assumption that because they've seen a craft but they don't have memory of contact. Well, I'm following cases like that, too. And eventually, there's some contacts markers that start to flood back. Mm-hmm. So does it have to do with the extraterrestrials manipulating us, or does it have to do with our own human consciousness? That's the question. Does it have to do with when we are ready on some level to interact? with these intelligences, these apparently otherworldly beings.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Now, just the one question that I'm sure you get asked all the time is, what do you think they want, and why would they be abducting all these hundreds of thousands of people? What benefit for them could they possibly be getting if that's the case?
Oh, you know, maybe they're just going to eat us, blah, 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 right? I mean, you hear so many theories. It's really ridiculous. I think we should pay attention to everything. But the more important question to ask is, what would we want with them? To me, it's a consciousness thing. And anyone that's had any kind of telepathic experience with these beings, and I did a little writing, but I need to do more about this because this is really important. And what I've been tracking is that with the contactee, when they're, and it again depends on the being. So that's why I love when people, what do you think their agenda is? Well, what there? Are we talking about reptilian? Are we talking about mantid beings? Grays? Are we talking about grays that live purportedly on ships? Okay. And they've never even, they don't live on planets. Or are we talking about grays? You know what I mean? So, I mean, I don't have my own spaceship. I wish I did. I'd be up there, you know, maybe, although I'm a wuss too, right? Because anytime I watch like space stuff, I get sick to my stomach. Every time I've been on a craft environment, I throw up. So those are markers that I look for. And I'm serious. I throw up. I get wicked, just seasick over it. So I don't know what all the agendas are. And I think that's why, I mean, there is not one, these are excellent questions, by the way, but this is why the research, this is why I think experiencers, even if they're anonymous, not only do we have to support one another and stick together, because the biggest thing in the field right now, okay, like it, and I'll tell you one of my favorite things is acting as a buddy to other experiencers. Once they feel heard and validated and, oh gosh, okay, I knew I wasn't crazy, okay, then we can calm down and really start to look at what's going on with their contact experiences. So how could I possibly know what the agenda is? I wouldn't. I don't know what the agenda is. I know what my conversations are with the ETs that I've been in contact with, and those conversations are very specifically that we need to be better guardians of our planet and that we need to cease and desist with the wars and nukes especially. So I know that's not going to be – I'm not going to be a fan of a lot of folks, but it does go back to the little news item, right, that you were talking about. And if we could go on forever about that, mm-hmm. and why are these UFOs going and shutting monitoring or shutting the installations down? And they're not being jerks about it. They're not initiating war from what I can see. They're just saying, guys, knock it off. What you do to your planet does affect us too. We tend to make everything, oh, they're ETs. Well, wait a minute. Did it occur to people that they have babies too? Does it occur to humanity that they have families? Oh, or is it part of the programming? No. They're robotic. They all work in a hive mentality. Does that kind of make us feel somewhat indifferent so that we don't have to deal with this intelligence? Is that how we insulate ourselves? Or do we perhaps say, oh, hold up, wait a minute. You know, is our tendency to go to war with everything that we don't understand, or should mm-hmm. we try to achieve communion? And what is communion? But to understand and to be able to see, well, what do you value? What's important to you? Are they here just for our resources? And either way, we need to wake up. To me, either way, it's great that we're looking and documenting UFOs in the sky. I love it because that only furthers what's going on, you know, with, and to me, the real guts of the juice of it is with the experiencers, the sacred truth tellers, as the late Dr. John Mack referred to them as, and I think that that's very accurate. Mm-hmm. Because it takes a lot of guts. I mean, who wants to say, oh yeah, I got abducted by aliens? I mean, I've heard it all. We don't have to talk about the alien probes or any of this. I've heard it all.
Well, one thing I do want to ask you while we're on this subject, and we have about 7 minutes or so left, and that is, how has this affected relationships, not only with you, but people you know? How does that work? When, I mean, you are obviously really into this and, you know, you're doing your work that you're doing. So someone like you, I imagine you have to live and breathe it to be as dedicated as you are. And how does when you're going through life, friendships, relationships, anything like that, what goes on with that?
Oh my gosh, what an absolutely beautiful question. This is an area too, I would say, in the research. Well, first off, I should say that my entire family does not like that I study UFOs. My mom, hates it. And, you know, again, different belief systems, religiously or whatever, okay? So there's that. Then the interpersonal relationships, not only in mine, I just recently, not too long, a couple of years ago, went through a divorce. But, again, just that not – people not really getting it or understanding it, which is fine. But, again, what I'm tracking is what's going on in the relationships, too, with a lot of the contactees. And what we're finding is many times the more advanced that the contactee gets in – their own awakening, they will oftentimes divorce and find another contactee, and then they're happy.
Yeah.
So we'll see. And this is another part of the research, but I love it. Now, what has it done for me in my relationships with humanity and relationship primarily with myself, my understanding of the Creator? These are the important. I have a much broader concept of a universal Creator, whatever that looks like. And then the friendships, it's sweetened my friendships. The experiencers have become like family to me. So I really, and I still adore my Earthling family, but I have a lot of the weird UFO people or star children that I just absolutely adore. They're crazy like me. So it's really enriched my life in many ways. And I do think it would have been easier to hide my light, to dumb myself down, to just simply shut up and go away. But I've decided that that is not the path to take, that it is important to be bold so that I can be a voice for the other experiencers globally as they find their voice and step out and say, hey, yeah, this is me too. Oh, by the way, in regards to coming out, we are having a Experiencer Liberation Day on October 1st, 2015. We're going to be selling pins on our website. So that's going to be very exciting. And then I did want to mention again that Starborn Support is going to be also having their next event, I believe the last week of August. So go on Starborn Support's the Experiencer Speak conference.
Yep.
Table.
You know, Audrey actually came over to my house and we sat down and recorded. And it was just one of those times I've had this happen twice where the recording didn't come out. So I'll have to have her on sometime. She's a real nice lady.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
And she does a nice job. She did a very well organized. I went to the Experiencer Speak, not last year, but the year before. Very well organized, great speakers. And, she, you know, I know how hard that is just from events that I've put on, not related to the UFOs and experiencers or any of that. But, you know, it takes a lot of real dedication to put something like that on, a lot of hard work.
And, it sure does.
Yes. And so we just have a couple more minutes. If there's anything else you want to say about your website or does that have a Facebook page as well?
You know what we do? We do. So if you just look for Free Experiencers on Facebook, you can find our group. And we have several admins. And there's so many people, again, that I haven't mentioned tonight. I just want to thank Dana Dunlin as well for being the website creator of, again, Free, which is experiencer.co.
And yeah. It's a very nice website, by the way, and that will be linked in our show notes.
That's fantastic. I appreciate that.
You bet. So how can someone reach you if you'd like to be contacted by them?
Excellent question. So the best way right now, we have a couple of people that help source the email for everyone, but they can just identify that they'd like me specifically, and then that will get forwarded by the admins to me. So the email is free. That's F-R-E-E at experiencer.co. And then from there, once I establish a relationship with the individual, you'll have all my information.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do something I've never done before, and that's I'm switching guests in the middle of this, this two-hour show. So okay. You'll have to bear with me, everyone. It's going to be just a little bit tricky. And I want to thank you very, very much for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me, Martin. It's been a pleasure.
And it'll be nice to catch up and see you in person, hopefully this next August.
I hope so. Oh, take care.
You too. Thank Bye-bye. You. Well, that's it for the show today. Remember, you can listen to the second half of the show with the podcast by becoming a subscriber for as low as $1 a month. And all that information is on our website, podcastufo.com. We have had a few emails about people having some issues with the sign-up, but I think we're pretty much ironing that all out as far as, you know, different countries and all that stuff and different platforms to listen to. So I want to thank everyone for helping out with the show today. Of course, our two guests, Christina Knowles, and I also want to thank Kerry Lloyd Whitehouse and Bruce Rainier for our music, Peggy Shunning for managing our Facebook page. Remember to like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. And you can check us out live next week right here on the Dark Matter Radio Network and every Wednesday at 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Martin Willis, and I'm saying thank you and keep your eyes to the sky.